So I'll be speaking about how countries or various jurisdictions' policies to mandate the use of front-of-package nutrition rating labels might conflict with commitments as members of the World Trade Organization. And I have no conflicts of interest to declare. So the public health problem motivating this issue is the global rise in obesity, which we've seen steadily over the past 3 decades among men and women in higher and lower income countries alike. And research suggests it's changing diets even more so than declines in physical activity that are contributing to this. And the characteristic changes that we see towards diets higher in fat and sugars has been deemed the nutrition transition. And so as one possible policy response, various jurisdictions are considering or have recently implemented front-of-package nutrition rating labels. These can be called interpretive nutrition labels or just front-of-package labels, but the main features being that their use is made mandatory. They're put on the front of a package of a food to alert consumers and help them to maybe make slightly healthier choices. And these might be more of the traffic light style where you see the color coding for various ingredients or just a simple warning label more akin to what we see on tobacco and alcohol products. And in Chile in 2012 was the first national policy to mandate the use of these labels. We've seen a few other countries do so in the following years. At the state level in the U.S., there have been proposals to have warning labels on sugar-sweetened beverages, but those haven't passed yet. And currently many countries, especially in Europe, are using these on a voluntary basis. So there's kind of growing momentum for these type of policies. So how is this relevant to trade? Well, by nature of these labels, they're intended to deter consumption of less healthy items. And trade commitments are basically commitments to have equal competition between products. And so a measure that discriminates against certain products is potentially a conflict with trade. And we see in reports from various committee meetings of the World Trade Organization and the Office of the U.S. Trade Representative that this has already been discussed, and even countries have slightly amended or changed plans to implement such policies because of trade pressure. So it is kind of on the radar of trade and sort of maybe an area of brewing conflict. So when countries join the WTO, they're agreeing to abide by a set of agreements. 161 countries are now members, so the vast majority of countries. And there's two agreements that are potentially relevant to this issue, the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade and the Agreement on Technical Barriers to Trade. And so to bring a case, one country on behalf of some interest group has to raise a case against another country, and then that case is litigated under all of the relevant agreements. And so I'll just briefly outline the arguments that would be heard or the arguments in order to find a violation of either of these agreements. And I should say that violating either agreement constitutes a violation of the trade commitment. So in the GATT, the key commitment is that all products, regardless of their origin, are treated equally. And this is not just in the way that a policy is written, but actually the way it's applied and how it works in practice. And in order to find a violation, two things have to be established: that products are comparable, and that a comparable product of foreign origin is receiving less favorable treatment. So again, these labels by their nature are intended to discriminate against less healthy packaged foods. So if you consider the scope of products, say, as snack foods, if those that are packaged and less healthy are disproportionately imported, that begins to look like discrimination. And because the packaged food and beverage market is relatively concentrated, there are several transnational corporations that dominate this market, that's not an implausible scenario. However, if that commitment is violated, there are certain exceptions in the GATT, particularly for the protection of human health. And so then it's considered whether that violation is permitted under this exception, which includes weighing measures such as the importance of the value that's protected by the measure, how effective it is, and how trade restrictive it is in comparison to other alternatives. And then turning to the TBT, so again, this is greater clarification for non-tariff measures such as labeling, and those were used increasingly as tariff discrimination has been reduced. And the key commitment here is basically the same as in the GATT, to have national treatment and treat foreign and domestic products alike. What's different in the TBT is that there's a clear deference to international standards. So if there is some international standards, which is a pretty loose definition actually, measures aren't given very much scrutiny. It's only if there's not a clear standard that a policy is designed in accordance with but then it's reviewed in greater detail. And then that analysis is very similar to the GATT, establishing that products are comparable and that an imported good is receiving less favorable treatment. In the same way that in the GATT there's a balance between the commitments and certain exceptions, in the TBT some degree of trade restrictiveness is permitted if it's to achieve a certain objective. And that list of objectives includes human health. And so then in establishing that, it's also considered the degree to which the policy contributes to the goal, what the risks of not implementing such a policy are, and there's a clear role for scientific information and evidence from research, and also an obligation, again, to use an international standard if one is available. So moving from the WTO, many countries are also now members of one or more regional trade agreements, which provide an additional set of commitments that may be slightly broader than the commitments in the WTO, an additional forum that countries may be under pressure for implementing a policy that violates those commitments. And as was discussed in sessions earlier today, this might include investor-state dispute settlement, which means that it's not just a country that can bring a case against another country, but actually any private entity as well. So it opens the door to another set of attacks for such a policy. So what are the implications of all this? I think that a trade agreement violation would be more likely to be found for nutrition rating label policies if there's the market of packaged, relatively unhealthy foods is disproportionately from imported goods relative to comparative domestic products. If the labeling scheme uses more of the warning label style as opposed to the graduated, like traffic light labeling, because with the graduated labeling, there's sort of a proportionate increase in the level of discrimination based on the level of unhealthiness versus the single threshold is just two products that could differ by a small amount and one is receiving this label. Because we see the role that evidence plays in settling these disputes, countries that don't have a lot of evidence on the significance of obesity and the need to implement this type of policy, it'd be harder to argue for the necessity of it. And then also, if they lack evidence that these policies work, that they do improve nutrition, also it'd be hard to argue that the policy achieves its goal. And then finally, if a country has a regional trade agreement with a country where a transnational food or beverage corporation is located, that would open them up possibly to another set of attacks from ISDS or other mechanisms. So how can we help ensure that these type of policies can be passed so that they can help improve nutrition? A clear first step would be to strengthen international standards. Codex Alimentarius are already a set that exists for food and nutrition, and so these could be added to that. Additional research on the importance of obesity and health and the related health problems, and also that these policies do work, would help to again establish the necessity and effectiveness of implementing these policies. Public pressure on the food and beverage industries so that any mandatory policy requiring these labels would have a little impact because either the food and beverage industries already use them more on a voluntary basis or maybe improve their product formulations to be healthier. Advocating so that the trade community understands the health impacts of trade and considers that in the design and analysis of those agreements. And then finally, probably most elusive, but having some sort of binding obligations under international law, similar to what we see in the FCTC, for either nutrition or health more broadly, that would sort of create more of a counterweight in terms of international legal commitments that countries have for health that are more equitable to those commitments they have for trade. And that's all I have. I want to thank Josh Meltzer and the group at O'Neill Institute for helping with this presentation. My references are on the slide. Thank you.
We have a few minutes for questions for Krisha. Okay.
Yep.
Why did you exclude terms from your analysis? Because you're looking at GATT and you're looking at CBT. Mm-hmm. Because they view it as unfairly limiting their ability to trade.
Right. So for everyone that doesn't know, TRIPS is the Agreement on Intellectual Property. From my read of it, I thought that it fell under the GATT and the TBT. There's also agreement on CITO and SPS agreement, which you could maybe see it falling under that as well, but that's more about food additives. So based on what I read and understood, I really thought it fell under these two, but you know, maybe it's interpretation, right, of a legal document. So I think that interpretation could vary. I don't quite, because it's not a trademark issue, I don't see it quite falling under that, but I could see the arguments either way.
So you talked a little bit about the need for evidence as one way of combating the problem at hand. Do you have a sense of what counts as evidence in these discussions? So do you need to show a randomized controlled trial that labeling works, or is it a milder standard of evidence that plays out?
So actually, that's interesting. So if it was heard under the SPS, there's actually a higher standard for scientific evidence. You have to have a risk assessment. But for the TBT and the GATT, I think it's pretty wide range. And I mean, people can file the sort of the equivalent of like an amicus brief with the WTO. So my understanding is that it's a pretty wide range of evidence that could be heard and considered. It's maybe mostly just a problem of the trade people being open to and aware of and informed about health issues, because that's just not their background.
Thanks.